Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to the NFC West edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. Hello, everybody. I am Pod Vader. I am here along with the superfans of the NFC West, being led by Justin, our Seahawks superfan, Dr. Jones, our Arizona Cardinals superfan, Jacob, our Rams superfan, and Charlie, our San Francisco 49ers superfan. If you want to be a superfan, all you need to do is email us nextfanup@gmail.com. We have a few openings. The Lions, Buccaneers, and Panthers are all searching for superfans. We'd love to have you join the team. So send in those emails. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, you can always reach out to us on Facebook, facebook.com/NFU Podcast, or just search Next Fan Up. We're pretty easy to find, ladies and gentlemen. It's not that difficult. All right. I will be back with my game-by-game win-loss predictions for all of these teams right after Justin runs through the roundtable with the rest of the NFC West superfans.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the NFC West preview. I'm Justin, the Seahawks superfan. I'm going to be talking with my NFC West rivals here today as we sort of start to wrap up these June/early July previews. So let's go ahead and start off with our 49ers superfan, Charlie. What's happening, Charlie?
Good morning.
And if we sound tired, it's because it's very early here on the West Coast to accommodate our East Coast brethren. Speaking of East Coast brethren, let's talk to Dr. Jones, the Arizona Cardinals superfan. What's happening, Dr. Jones?
As I sit here in my posh office in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, I want to say good morning to everyone on the East Coast and a very late evening to those on the West.
Boo. And then finally, the most punctual and easy to communicate with human being I know, Jared, our Rams superfan. What's happening, Jared?
Thank you, Justin. Yes, that definitely describes me. It is early here on the West Coast, but glad to be talking to you guys.
So, just like we've been doing with all of the other shows, we're going to be going team by team, talking about the NFC West. This one is going to be one, obviously, that I'm a big fan of, since this is my division, and it's weird. I haven't been on a show in a month, which, when you normally host one every week, it's a little weird. So, we're going to go in reverse order of standing, starting with the bottom team from the NFC West in 2016, and that's going to be your 49ers, Charlie. So, just right off the bat, let's talk a little bit about your offseason. Some of the key losses, key subtractions. Who have the 49ers lost since the end of the 2016 season?
You could say lost as a good thing, and then you could say lost as a bad thing. I think we're more on the good side. We lose, a couple of horrible offensive linemen and Marcus Martin. We lose Colin Kaepernick, that definitely needs a fresh start or a activist role. Quentin Patton, Torrey Smith, very low-end players. The one player that we did lose to Dr. Jones that I think is actually going to be a very underrated addition is Anton Bethea. He's going to be great for you guys, even if he's in a backup role. So those are, really the only losses we had. Everything else has been pretty much an addition offseason, and hopefully it ends up coming to fruition.
What about your key additions? Who have you added?
Well, there you go. I mean, looking at the offseason that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan put together, at first I was very nervous, with free agency. We brought in, the ageless waiter, Pierre Garçon, at wide receiver, right at 29, 30 years old. Definitely a little nervous, when you're a young team rebuilding, bringing in veterans like Earl Mitchell, Kyle Juszczyk, Brian Hoyer at quarterback, bringing in older players to start helping this rebuild. I think early on, Kyle Shanahan saw this roster, figured it is a bad roster. It's a 2-14 roster, obviously, but I think he feels that we aren't as far away as we could be. So he's bringing in veterans to help, inspire certain position groups. and bring along some of the younger players within that position group. So I like the strategy. Even guys like Pierre Garçon are you know, got signed to like a 5-year deal. But if you look at the actual, you know, numbers behind the deal, it's a 1 or a 2-year deal, and you can get out of it after that third year. So he's not going to hold back the development of any other wide receivers. So, you know, at first glance, I was very nervous, but looking into all these veteran contracts, they're all pretty much short-term deals that, you know, we're going to be having guys to help start the turnaround. So we're not just a complete embarrassment again, this upcoming year. So, excited for that. But really what got me the most excited was the draft. You know, with John Lynch coming into his very first draft, even with, you know, the good generals that he brought in and Martin Mayhew, you know, the Niners have, you know, John Lynch really had no track record. So, round one, he brings in, Solomon Thomas, but not before squeezing the Chicago Bears for a couple of extra draft picks for moving back one spot when Solomon Thomas was the target all along. So, extremely happy to see, you know, that awesome trade that Lynch was able to pull out. And then later in round one, he drafts my draft crush in Reuben Foster. So, you know, when we first drafted our third defensive lineman in 3 years in Solomon Thomas, I was very, very, you know, frustrated and angry. Because I felt like we're tripling down on a position that we were already a strength in. Well, then the front office totally redeems themselves by bringing in Reuben Foster. And I don't know if you guys have had a chance to read that Monday Morning Quarterback article with Peter King talking about the experience in the 49ers draft room. I thought it was just a great way to, you know, usher in the new era of John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. So you see or you hear about Parag Marathe, who's been a feature of the 49ers front office for the past 14 or 15 years. In fact, Parag was hired originally by Bill Walsh. But so many people have said that, you know, Parag is kind of untouchable. And so a lot of coaches, front office personnel and GMs have not wanted to come to San Francisco, saying that this guy, if he does something wrong, he's protected. He's never, you know, is never going to be let go. Well, you know, I thought it was great to hear how John Lynch was allowing him to kind of work his magic on the phones. I guess he was really badgering your GM there, Justin, on trying to get into that Reuben Foster pick. You know, I guess John Snyder had to go to the restroom midway through the conversation with Parag, and Parag wouldn't let him. Prague wanted him to make that trade right then. Ended up cooler heads prevailed, and Snyder got to go to the restroom and came back with about, well, I think 30 seconds left in the pick, and went ahead and made the trade to get Reuben Foster in. So I liked how John Lynch kind of let Prague do his thing, gave him a role and something that he could excel in, which is negotiating trades. And knowing what to give up and how much is too much or how much is the right amount to get into certain spots that the organization wanted to get into. So very great symbiotic relationship going on right now between all three of those two, you know, Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch and Parag Marathe. So excited for that. The rest of the draft, we brought in probably the guy who looks the most like Richard Sherman and Akello Witherspoon, but tackles, like he, like the ball carrier has some kind of infectious disease is how he tackles. So you could see him diving on the ground in some of his college tape, avoiding tackles, including one time where he tried to tackle Joe Williams, our running back out of Utah that we drafted in the fourth round, and it literally Joe Williams was getting tackled by another linebacker on Akello Witherspoon's team, and could not kind of got pushed into Witherspoon, and Witherspoon dove in the opposite direction to get out of the contact. So that'll definitely be something that I think you know, a physical safety like John Lynch is not going to bring in a guy that he thinks is not physical at all. So they must see something in him, whether it's during their pre-visit workout or at the combine, that says that he's going to get more physical in his NFL career. So we'll see. Then we also brought in kind of a flyer on a guy named C.J. Beathard. One of the last couple picks in the third round. This quarterback for Iowa was great in the 2015 season. Had a very stacked team of very good offensive linemen. And then in 2016, a lot of those guys graduated or went to the NFL. And he was very bad in 2016. So he was drafted in the third round, which, in my opinion and many other experts' opinion, was a overdraft. Probably someone who we could have gotten the fifth or fourth round. But when you bring in a coach that is, you know, the quote unquote quarterback whisperer, or that is his main area of expertise, and he says he wants that guy, you got to give it to him. You know, who's John Lynch, or who am I to say that C.J. Beathard is overdrafted when the guy who ran the top scoring offense in the NFL last year says this is the guy he wants. You give it to him. So we'll see how he works. Third round quarterback wasn't a lot of draft capital spent. We'll see when we get to our record prediction, but I think we'll still be in the spot for a quarterback next year.
It sounds like you're all in though on the new coaching staff and the new front office staff.
Yeah, but see, the thing is I understand my internal bias. Fans of bad teams always are excited for a new regime because it's the potential to get out of that bad track. And yes, the Niners have only been bad for what, 2.5-3 years, really, it's easy to get on that bandwagon. You know, we got someone new, everything will be great. You know, it's like kind of going back to that abusive significant other. Oh, everything will be great. They said it'll be fine. You know, so I'm bought in, and I feel a lot more bought in than I was with the Chip Kelly era. A lot more bought in than I was with the Jim Tom Sula era. We'll see. It's at least Kyle Shanahan, I feel like, is coming in with a incredible amount of offensive prowess. He's bringing in a guy who I feel kind of reminds me of Carmen Policy, which is the Niners team president that kept Eddie D from firing Bill Walsh, half a dozen times, probably more than that, during their era. He brought in a guy who's able to, kind of have those one-on-one talks with the media, who's able to inspire confidence in an organization just when he speaks. So I think John Lynch is that guy that keeps the front office away from Kyle Shanahan and keeps Kyle Shanahan away from the front office and allows Kyle Shanahan to build something here. And so I'm very bought in on that part of it more than anything else, even though, last year he was getting ready for Fox broadcasts, but now he's going to be the, basically the face of our organization. And, it really shows that great management and inspiring leadership, it transcends all types of organizations and industries. So if you have a good manager, they might not be good at that thing they're doing at that industry. And you pick them up they are good at an industry. Then you pick them up and take them over to an industry that they've never been in because they're good managers, because they're inspirational leadership. That will transcend, that will translate over to that new organization. So I think it's a story of that. And I'm excited to see where that takes us.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to round up the draft talk. There's someone I have to mention. George Kittle is a tight end we picked up in the fifth round. And he was really C.J. Beathard's only, kind of main target that he was able to hit there in Iowa. And I have a feeling this kid's going to be our starting tight end. In OTAs, he was the main I was getting all the buzz from the Niners Twitter, from the sports writers. So, you know, really not a lot of flashiness to him. He's just kind of one of those hard-nosed kids that, comes in and just wants to be in every drill, wants to, you know, kind of work his tail off. So I think George Kittle could end up being a household name. Well, maybe not household for other teams, but for Niner fans, he's going to be someone you'll know very well.
So we'll talk about kind of our predicted standings a little bit later, but at least in terms of this team, Charlie, Niners were a 2-14 team. Do you expect that to improve a lot? What's your sense for how they're going to do, you know, just year over year in terms of improving?
Well, I think the defense is going to be amazing. You know, adding in Solomon Thomas and Earl Mitchell to a defensive front seven that gave up, the most passing yards, or sorry, rushing yards in franchise history last year, and a historic amount overall. So, yeah, we're adding in some great players there. Navarro Bowman's back. You know, we have Malcolm Smith, who was outside of his original position that he left Seattle with when he was in Oakland. He was kind of playing outside of position and more of a traditional linebacker in a 4-3, so a regular 4-3 versus a 4-3 under or over, which is what Seattle likes to run, which, you know, that just determines on when you have a linebacker on the ball. Is the linebacker on the ball above the tight end, or is the tight end on the other side? That's what denounces a 4-3 over or under. So, yeah, I think we will be a lot better defensively. You know, even the Leo position, which you know very well, Justin, it actually originates in San Francisco when Carroll was there. You know, we have Eric Armstead, who's going to be playing that position. A lot of people have just been like, that's not your traditional Leo. He's, you know, almost 280 pounds. He's 6'7". You know, it's just a huge guy trying to play Leo. When you traditionally see like, you know, a more springy athlete, you know, kind of your more traditional pass rusher. I think it's going to work a lot, because what happened was, is Eric Armstead, you know, strained his shoulder last year about week seven, went on IR, hasn't really been able to bulk up like you would traditionally see a healthy player doing an off season. So when Kyle Shanahan first took over, they had Eric Armstead, they kind of put a fitness program together for him to kind of become that type of player. So when you would usually see Eric Armstead coming into camp or OTAs at, you know, 290 pounds, the guy's down, you know, down under 280, looking very slender, and has been working on, you know, agility and speed and get off the ball drills to become that springy type athlete. So, you know, I think he's actually going to be a lot better than a lot of people think. And then I think DeForest Buckner, who was a fantastic, you know, first round pick for the Niners the year before, played the most defensive snaps out of everyone, every defensive lineman last year. He is he's going to take another step forward after having an offseason in an NFL workout program. So I think there at the 3-tech, he's just going to be a monster up front. And I know that week 17 game when Seattle came to San Francisco, Buckner was all over the field, even though that was in a losing effort. I think he's really going to take a step forward. So defensively, we're going to be great. Offensively, I think it's going to be slow road. Brian Hoyer is not the answer. He is simply a stopgap. If we are able to pass the ball a decent amount, and we're going to be okay. I think our running game is still going to be the strength of the team. And Carlos Hyde, Joe Williams, Tim Hightower, we'll all be very good there. But if we can't pass the ball, then teams are just going to stack the box, and it'll just be like, you know, last year or years prior, where the only weapon we have is running, and teams don't.
What do you think
Dr. Jones, you look at this team, cellar dwellers in the division last year. Do you think the team has made big strides?
Well, I will congratulate my friend on that first round. I thought it was a master stroke, Thomas and Foster. That might matter 3, 4, 5 years from now. Transcending industries, Leo's, all this wonderful defense he talks about. Brian Hoyer's his quarterback. I don't think it's going to help him very much.
You say, Jared, is this a team that's going to be out of the bottom of the division, or are they still way too early in the rebuild?
Well, I hope they're not out of the bottom of the division, because that means the Rams are in last place. But yeah, I agree. Their first round haul was really impressive. I was so mad at the Bears for giving up all those picks to the Niners. And then the rest of the draft, like, I didn't really know a whole lot of those players and wasn't nearly as impressed. But yeah, as Dr. Jones says, when you have Brian Hoyer as your quarterback, that's not good for the long term. But I'm sure they're going to get either Cousins or one of the amazing quarterbacks that are coming out in the 2018 draft. So this year may be kind of like they might win, you know, 5 games and it be a successful season. But then, yeah, I think next year or until they get their quarterback, that's when they'll if and when they get their quarterback will be when they make their big move.
To me, the 49ers are really interesting. They've been sort of proof positive these last few years how important coaching is. You know, you've seen a roster go from, you know, multiple NFC championship games to immediately just kind of a dumpster fire because of one of the most significant downgrades at the coaching, but at head coach, I think I've ever seen, going from Harbaugh to Jim Tomsula to Chip Kelly. So I think that change is got to be huge. I think Kyle Shanahan is an excellent head coach, and I am definitely very impressed by what John Lynch has done so far. The one thing I'm really iffy about, though, is, you know, everybody's really, really high on that first round, and I totally get that. You know, if you get the top two players on your board and you get them just scattered over the first round, certainly I can understand being happy with that. I'm not a Solomon Thomas fan. I look at Solomon Thomas and I see almost exactly, and I get that they play a different position, but I see almost exactly Aaron Curry. Here's a guy who's just a super, super, super athlete. But, you know, when you look at his tape in college, he took plays off, he missed, he didn't seem to have a great nose for the football, a great head for the game. But with his physical abilities, you know, surrounded by some other good players, he might prove to be just the steal of the draft if you're getting what a lot of people thought was a top five talent that late. But he's what John Lynch, you know, when we look back in 2 or 3 years at this draft and all and the moves he made, I think he's going to be what we used to decide if it was a successful draft. I'm just not totally sold on him. Call me a skeptic, but I want to see him actually show up on an NFL field before I'm ready to say Solomon Thomas really is kind of worthy of the sort of heaping praise we gave, because at least right now he looks like a combine super warrior and a moderately productive college player to me. So take that for what it is. Let's go ahead and turn it over to you, Jared. Let's talk about your Rams, another team that has made a pretty significant addition via subtraction at the front office. And let's go ahead and just start there with players who have left this team. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about the key departures?
Sure. So there weren't a whole lot of key departures, actually, for the Rams. I mean, it wasn't anything like last offseason where they lost Janoris Jenkins or Rodney McLeod. But yeah, actually, I'm drawing a blank on like who their best player they would have lost would have been.
Yeah,
the main thing,
Kenny Britt.
You're
right.
Kenny Britt had such a good statistical season, but he was such a cancer in the locker room, and he just didn't get along with anybody. Like I wasn't even anticipating him signing. Although he did put up a good statistical season, but yeah, But yeah, they didn't really lose any good players, and that's kind of one of the reasons why they were 4-12 last year. But and even in free agency, like gaining players, they didn't do a whole lot. But Andrew Whitworth was a huge signing. I mean, replacing Greg Robinson with like Andrew Whitworth is like replacing the 30 or 32nd best left tackle with one of the top five. So that was a pretty good move. And then really only the big move they made in additions was getting Robert Woods. And I think they overpaid him, giving him about $7 million a year, but luckily only about $15 million of that is guaranteed. So they could cut him pretty easy. But yeah, when you have a bad offense, you're not going to be able to attract a lot of the big name wide receivers until, you know, you can prove it, that they're actually good. I think actually the Rams' biggest moves in the offseason was just overhauling their whole coaching staff, especially on the offensive side of the ball. They just couldn't get anything done with offense with Jeff Fisher. He's just so stuck in the past and just thought, oh, we could just run it down people's throat and the passing game doesn't matter. And just his choices for offensive coordinators with Rob Boris and Frank Signetti the last 2 years was just, I think that's the biggest thing that got him fired. I mean, if he would have hired just a halfway competent offensive coordinator the last 2 years and the Rams kept up with their 7-9 stuff, he might still be their coach. But I think his just, I don't know if he was just threatened by, if he hires a good offensive coordinator, that that offensive coordinator might take his job, kind of what happened in Tampa Bay with Dirk Koetter and then with Ben McAdoo and the Giants. But man, he got himself fired the other way with just having a bad staff. But yeah, I really like Sean McVay. I mean, I know he's young and he's unproven, but I mean, just showing that he doesn't have a big ego by hiring Wade Phillips to take care of defense is a very, very smart move. I think they're kind of just a package deal in terms of rating what a good staff. And then even getting former offensive coordinators like Aaron Cromer to be a line coach and Greg Olsen to be quarterback coach is definitely a good start. I mean, they had no talent whatsoever in their or experience in their offensive coaching staff last year. So at least they've got some guys who can teach up their offense, especially Jared Goff. He just had nobody to teach him anything last year. So, and then Matt LaFleur, kind of not as big of a name, but their new offensive coordinator, he did great work with Matt Ryan the last couple of years. Saw him kind of make the leap along with Kyle Shanahan to one of the top quarterbacks in the league. So I'm definitely excited about him. And but yeah, so not a whole lot of moves in free agency, which the Rams have kind of been in the last couple of years. But yeah, I think just they're overhauling their coaching staff to what Fisher had, especially on offense. I mean, Greg Williams is a good defensive coordinator, but I think most people argue that Wade Phillips is better.
I certainly would. I think Wade Phillips is probably one of the best defensive coordinators in the league. Let me ask you this, though. So here's a team that struggled last year, as you said. So I can only assume that you were able to get a terrific player with your very high draft pick.
No, well, not exactly. So even trading out that first-round pick from last year, that was rough. And then I'd say out of all the Rams' draft pick, their top pick, Gerald Everett, was the one I questioned the most. I mean, just looking at all the other picks, I thought they got pretty good value at every other pick, right about where they should be taken, or maybe the guy slipped a little bit. But, man, Gerald Everett at number 44 overall was a stretch for me, especially when they could have had a guy like Forrest Lamp just sitting there if they would have just stayed put. But I guess one thing that probably the biggest thing that surprised me about the Rams draft was I thought, but we need help on the O-line and we need help at wide receiver, or just receiver in general. And then the Rams go out and spend three of their top four picks on a tight end and two wide receivers, but then they don't even take a single offensive lineman the whole draft. And they already dumped Greg Robinson, which, you know, they agree with me and most every football fan out there that he wasn't that good. So But they must really believe in their offensive line to pass on Forrest Lamp and all these other good offensive line prospects that they could have had in the second, third, even fourth round. So, yeah, Gerald Everett, I mean, he's super raw, not even that productive at Division II or 1A, whatever level he was at. But, I mean, Sean McVay worked his magic with Jordan Reed and some of the other wide receiver or tight ends at Washington. So maybe he saw something, but yeah, I thought that was a super big stretch to take him, even trading back in the second round where they took him.
Yeah. I guess, the Andrew Whitworth signing, that's literally the only thing that has happened to your offensive line, isn't it?
They also got John Sullivan, the first center. He's taking over for Tim Barnes. But yeah, that was it pretty much. So, and then he's got his injury history. So they picked up a pretty good center. Well, I shouldn't say great, but probably my favorite undrafted free agent, a guy who played Washington. I can't pronounce his name. It's like Echelkamp or something like that. But yeah, they're going to trust the guys. Actually, their O-line did pretty good in 2015. I mean, relatively speaking, I read somewhere they're somewhere between 5 and 10 in terms of run blocking in 2015. And it's basically the same guys except for losing Greg Robinson. So I think just in mini camps, the Rams coaches saw like, hey, we got some good young players here. Maybe we can do some with them. But when they went to mini camp and saw their wide receivers, they're like, whoa, we've got some major issues. Let's draft three guys and revamp our receiver core.
I guess that was going to be my next question. Do you think that the addition of Andrew Whitworth being pretty much the one big change is enough to resurrect Todd Gurley from the whatever dimension he was in last year?
I hope so. I mean, I've seen and read a lot of articles that say like, oh, it was O-line's fault last year. Oh, it was Todd Gurley's fault. I think it was a little bit of both. But I think the day before Jeff Fisher got fired after the Falcons game, Todd Gurley called the Rams offense a junior high offense. And it made big headlines because it was the only time in the 5 years that Fisher was head coach that really any player had ever spoken up to the media and said, like, our team is awful or anything even remotely that negative. So I feel like he was pretty frustrated with the scheme, and maybe that was, he didn't want to throw his teammates under the bus, but I think everybody in the building knew that Goff wasn't ready last year. So they just focused on him and he got frustrated and he missed some holes even that showed up, I think, just out of frustration of maybe he was just trying to overthink it and do too much. But I think it's maybe just Whitworth signing plus good coaching and Rob Havenstein was injured most last year, even though he basically missed all of training camp, showed up week one with no practice and had kind of a little bit of a setback from his rookie year where he was great. So I think him being healthy and then just good coaching, I think it'll improve it. I don't know if Todd Gurley will be, you know, leading the league or closely in the league in rushing, but I think he's going to be a lot better this year with the good coaching, with the better players, and then just Goff's improvement will make Gurley's production go up.
So when you look at this team, what do you think the Rams do well and will do well in 2017?
Well, it's a stretch to say this, not seeing what they look like in a 3-4 defense, but I think they're like they've been the last couple of years. Their front seven will be their bread and butter in terms of their best unit. And Wade Phillips, I think, he's made a lot of comments about Robert Quinn, like just how he sees a lot of DeMarcus Ware in him. And Quinn's been hurt the last couple of years. So, I mean, maybe health has as much to do with it. But I think their pass rush is going to be great with Connor Barwin and Quinn on the edges and then Brockers and Aaron Donald just coming up the middle. So I think their pass rush is going to be great. And they drafted a couple guys who are have at least the physical ability in terms of measurables of speed and that kind of stuff to rush the passer as well. So I think their pass rush is going to be the strength of their team. And then don't forget Johnny Hecker. He is the NFL's best punter. So I think they're going to continue to lead the league in punting efficiency and kicks inside the 20. So, but all seriousness, Johnny Hecker is amazing. But yeah, those are the two biggest strengths. And then offense, I mean, if they're number 20 in the league, I think that'll be amazing. Not saying that they will, but they just have to climb so far up that I think expecting much more than being like 20 to 25 in the league is not realistic at this point.
The Rams won 4 games last year. How many games do you think they'll win this year?
You know, it's so funny because I've read some projections that say, oh, the Rams are not favored to win any game. And then I see this other stuff from Pro Football Focus that says they're like projected to win like 8.5 games. I'm like, well, how can they win 8.5 games and not favored to win in a game? But I think this year they'll win 6 or 7 games. And even though that was kind of the staple Jeff Fisher, I think they're up on the rise. And if their whole future, if they're going to be good or not, is dependent on Goff's development. They've got a lot of good pieces on defense, but yeah, if Goff can develop, and I mean, he's got the good coaches in his ear, and he's got much better offensive line personnel, much better receivers to throw to. So if he can improve this year, and even if the Rams are, you know, only win, you know, say 4 or 5 games, but he's shown improvement, then the following season, you know, they can just continue getting better pieces around him. He'll continue to grow, then that's a good sign. And if he's a complete dumpster fire again this year, well, they've got their first round pick next year. There's 3 or 4 pretty good quarterback prospects in this draft. So I think either way, either he improves and they're good, or if he's a total disaster, then they'll just take another quarterback next year.
Charlie, do you look at this team and see 6 or 7 wins?
Yeah, I think that's right about where they would sit. I do have a qualm that you would only give Jared Goff 2 years and you draft another quarterback after giving up so much to draft him, what, number one overall? I think you guys will go with him another year, at least get him to that 4th year before you try to draft a replacement. Maybe you bring in, you know, like a mid-round type guy, but I think you're chained to Jared Goff for at least 4 years.
Yeah, I was just saying if he's a complete disaster, then they draft him. But if he shows signs of improvement, stick with him. And that's only, I mean, I would just feel awful if the Rams have like a top 3 pick and they can take one of the good quarterbacks. And they're like, oh, well, let's just give Jared Goff one more year. And then he's bad again next year. And then the following drafts, there aren't really any good quarterbacks. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, I'm 90% sure that he's not a dumpster fire and he'll be able to show improvement just from everything I've heard with his work ethic and how well he's clicking with Sean McVay and the staff. But yeah, you're right. It would be an utter disaster unless Snead would be completely gone. It's a miracle he's still with the team. But
it's the hair as to why he's still with the team.
Yes, definitely the hair. And luckily, I mean, he could be gone. I think he has maybe 2 years left on his contract. And McVay can say, well, he's not my quarterback. I'm not tied to him. And they could just hire a new GM next year. But, yeah, you're right. I'm really, really hoping that it works out with Goff and they don't have to start over with a new quarterback next year.
What do you say, Dr. Jones? Is this a team that is rising up into the mid-tier?
Well, to answer that question, no. But just to side with my boy Jared real quick, Bill Belichick's proven a sucker is born every day. So let's say the Rams go 4-12, 5-11, like I'm expecting. They get a top pick and they've got a quarterback in their sights. I'm sure there's a really crazy team out there that thinks they can resurrect the career of Jared Goff if he has another poor season. So there is the possibility that that's something that they could swing a trade to get him out of there and bring in a Sam Darnold or whoever they want from a prospect standpoint next year. Do I think it's going to happen? No. but it is a possibility based on the suckers born every day theory. Now, as far as the Rams themselves, I think it's safe to say that the best addition they had was a defensive coordinator, and their key departures were kicking the entire coaching staff to the curb. So with that being said, they brought in a superior pass blocker for what looks to be a run team next year. And that's kind of the key that I see going forward. They got a couple of years left in this rebuild, but I'm not seeing 7 or 8, 6 or 7 wins. I'm seeing 4 or 5. Sorry.
You're mean, Dr. Jones. But I don't know. To me, I'm just so down on Jeff Fisher from having seen him from so long that I almost feel like I don't know what you could do to improve a team more than getting rid of Jeff Fisher. I'm probably hating on him more than he deserves, but I just have to believe that, you know, if you have Aaron Donald, you have to have a somewhat decent defense because he's such a good player. But I think that 5-win mark seems right about right to me. To me, the most intriguing team, though, is got to be the Arizona Cardinals. Here's a team that I think everybody expected to be a potential Super Bowl contender last year, and for whatever reason, struggled. So why don't you go ahead and take us through your Cardinals, starting with some of those departures here over the offseason, Dr. Jones?
Sure. So obviously, last season was a disappointment. When we talk about the king of dumpster fires, we have to talk about the special teams unit of the Arizona Cardinals last year. We'll talk about that more in a bit. But from a losses standpoint, I think it starts at the top. One of the top 3-4 D tackles in the entire league, Calais Campbell, has moved on to the Jacksonville Jaguars. As we've been talking for about 12 months now, the Cardinals think that Robert Kimdichie is ready to step into that role after a year of basically being redshirted. I have my doubts personally, because everyone sounds great in the offseason, but then when the regular season starts, it's don't seem to get any snaps, and that scares me. So Calais Campbell, losing him is going to be a big loss to our defensive line. And probably the most underrated loss of the entire defense will be Tony Jefferson, strong safety, one of the top run-stuffing strong safeties in the entire league last year. Tackle rate was ridiculous. We're going to really miss him. He got a ton of money from the Baltimore Ravens, and they should be very happy to have him. Everybody else, though, I mean, these are one or two down players. DJ Swearinger, Marcus Cooper, our number two cornerback last year, who we picked off the Kansas City Chiefs trash heap midseason, turned him into a $16 million player for the Chicago Bears. Kevin Minter, a one-down run-stuffing linebacker. So from a loss perspective, I don't really see much hurting us other than the loss of Calais and Tony Jefferson. We have made some signings and some draft picks to help with the Tony Jefferson loss, and we've got some internal players that we redshirted last year and that we kept on the active roster strategically, but they never played, that we think are going to be able to replace the loss of Calais. I don't see it yet.
You know, I look at the losses, and I mean, Calais Campbell, I think you're definitely right, is the big one. I love Tony Jefferson. I think it's a bummer for the Cardinals that he's gone. But other than that, you're right, though. I mean, Kevin Minter, okay. Alex Okafor, fine. DJ Swearinger, all right. Darryl Washington, okay. Who though, did you add to this team since last year to make this a better team than a team that really underperformed last year?
Sure. And the additions to replace those losses, I mean, we'll start with our second round, our first round draft picks, Hassan Reddick and Buda Baker. So Hassan Reddick, he's going to be another speed linebacker, much in the Darryl Washington mode. I don't think we've actually had a linebacker of his quality since Washington started smoking the reefer about 3 years ago. So I think that's going to be a very dynamic playmaker. And based on everything I'm hearing, we've got a little Von Miller in there with some coverage ability from a pass rush standpoint. His speed is off the charts coming around the edge. He's playing a lot of inside linebacker in our OTAs and our mini camps this off season because we have Bayon Buchanan, who had some ankle surgery. So he's getting a lot of inside linebacker reps, and it looks like he's going to be starting the season at inside linebacker. Another addition that we had, which third time's the charm, Carlos Dansby is back in Arizona. We are very happy to have him back. He's a Cardinals legend. I believe he's going to have his name in the Ring of Honor one day. And many people may not realize this. Carlos Dansby is one interception away from becoming the fifth player in NFL history with at least 40 sacks and 20 interceptions. That's a big stat. He's played for a lot of teams. He's kind of been a hired gun the last 5 or 6 years, but he can definitely replace a lot of what we lost in the center of the defense, especially from an experience standpoint, an education standpoint. He can teach Hassan Reddick. Now, our safety position, losing Tony Jefferson, was a huge deal. Now, I think that's going to be a double-edged sword here. Buda Baker, the guy that we drafted in the second round, we actually traded up to get him. If you look at the War Room video when we drafted Buda Baker, Steve Keim, Bruce Arians, they were high-fiving the entire team. They were very happy about that pick. Personally, so am I. I think we found the second honey badger. He's a run-stuffing safety with some serious skills. We got to teach the kid how to catch a little bit. He missed probably 3 or 4 interceptions at Washington because they're just bouncing off those cast-iron hands. But as long as we can teach him how to catch, I think we found a diamond in the rough with Buda Baker. And then, of course, the big addition, which I think is going to make all the difference as long as he stays healthy, which we all know is a problem for the Cardinals. We're going to have the real honey badger back again this year. Tore his ACL 2 years ago, had that full year. We all know the first year back from his ACL tear is never the best. We've got a workmanlike, serious honey badger. All OTAs and minicamps, a little bit of smiling, but this guy's going to work, and he's expecting to crush it this year. And then I know Charlie mentioned it earlier. Juan Bethea is coming over from San Francisco. A little bit of age, a little bit of experience. I don't know what to expect out of him, but it made me happy to hear that he was very excited about the prospects of him in Arizona. And last but not least, probably the biggest addition of the entire offseason, Arizona Cardinals, top 10 in defense, top 10 in offense last year, absolutely last in special teams. Phil Dawson, I can't wait to see what we can do if we can make a field goal from inside 40. It's very exciting.
Can we agree that tie game between my Seahawks and your Cardinals was probably the single worst special teams game that may have ever been played?
I think
agreed,
I lost.
It was a great game.
I think I lost 10 years off the end of my life. I went to bed that night thinking I was hit by a train. That's how I felt when that game ended.
Yeah, I'm never going to forget that game for terrible reasons. Speaking, though, of offseason addition, though, what about the addition of one more year to the odometer of your quarterback?
You know, I think we're going to set a record. We've got those cryo freezes. Ted Williams is frozen in Arizona. I think we're going to have one of those cryogenic frozen Carson Palmers by the end of the season. We are praying to sweet Jesus that he doesn't fall apart this year. I will tell you, they're doing a lot of strategic things this offseason, though. He's not getting as many reps on his arm as he has in the past. And if you remember last year when we hit the season, when the season started, Carson, he did not have the velocity on his throws. We didn't feel that there was as much energy coming out of his arm as we used to see in the past. So Bruce Arians and the staff, they started cutting out Wednesday practices for Carson and giving the backup quarterback all of the reps on Wednesdays. I think that's one of the reasons Gabbert came to town. That's the last time you're going to hear me say his name, though, was because he expects to get those Wednesday reps. Now, as we go through the season, Carson Palmer actually got more alive, more velocity on his throws, and things started really clicking for him. And they're attributing that to the rest that they gave him in the offseason. Well, they've started that, or the rest they gave him during Wednesdays. Now, they're actually doing that in the offseason now, and they're seeing that same speed and velocity and zip that they saw at the end of the year last year. So will that stop him from getting hit by Aaron Donald, Robert Quinn, and Michael Bennett and getting hurt? No. Can we pray to all that is holy that it helps? Yes, that's what I would say.
So, similar question to what I asked Jared. What do you think it will be the strength of this team come 2017?
I think the strength of this team is going to be overall speed, team speed. Obviously, from an offensive and defensive standpoint, we are a premier team in the NFL. We don't have nearly as many expectations this year, which I think can only help us. As I've said, there's been a workmanlike attitude. I think people want to regain what they've lost. So team speed is what I'm going to go with. When you look at our linebacker core, Reddick, Deion Buchanan, Carlos Dansby, you look at Chandler Jones, Marcus Golden, Buda Baker, Tyrann Mathieu, Patrick Peterson. And then you go to the offense, you've got John Brown, J.J. Nelson, David Johnson, our third-round pick, Chad Williams, who I think is going to be a steal. We are going to be flying all over the field all of the time. Will we be a little undersized in some positions? I believe so, and that could be that could hurt us if there's a very powerful run game that comes to town. But we are going to be an exciting team to watch that just explodes to the ball.
So I feel like I've already got a bit of a sense for it. I'm going to guess you think the Cardinals are going to win more than seven games this year?
More than seven, yes. That 7-8-1 drives me crazy when I look at it, because we lost three games due to field goals last year. And if we make those three field goals, we're a playoff team, and we probably do some damage with how hot we were at the end of the season. But I see anywhere between 9 and 11 wins, and I'm going to put that right at 10-6, which would make us, I think, a solid wild card team. I don't see us catching Seattle as the Russell Wilson experiment goes into a more healthy season. But I can definitely see us being second, and if something happens with Seattle, winning the division.
What do you think, Charlie? Are we going to have a repeat of the 2016 Cardinals, or is this going to be more of the 2015 Cardinals who won 13 games?
I'm very torn because, as you said, I mean, it all hinges on Carson. And, you know, Carson was, you know, the end of the last couple seasons, and, you know, you talked about being hot in 2016, you know, that kind of flies in the face of that, because in just, you know, my viewpoint, it looked like he was really starting to lose a step at the end of both the last two seasons. So that's my worry, and I think we talked about this the last preview, last year's preview, is that that playoff loss they had in Carolina, you know, kind of hung over the team a little bit. A la the Seahawks Patriots Super Bowl. I think they could be, I'm looking at right around the 9-win area, but I just look at your skill positions and your and a lot of your draft picks that you brought in, and you guys are going to be still a great team. I don't see you getting over the hump, though.
Jared, is this a team that you see back in the playoff hunt?
Yeah, I see them at about 10, 11 wins. Yeah, I think last year was more of an aberration for me. Yeah, just a lot of tough losses. But I do think their subtractions from free agency definitely outweigh their additions. So I don't know if they're going to be quite as good. But, yeah, I'd say they're probably a 10-win team that will make a wild card push for sure, probably be a wild card team. Although if they do lose Carson, yeah, I agree, then they're going to be middle of the pack, fighting for the seller with the 49ers and Rams.
That's a big seller. For me, so going into last year, I felt like I had a really good sense for the Cardinals, and I know that we argued a little bit about it then, that I felt like they were going to take a big step back. Which they did, and you know that was following a really tough playoff loss, and you know you talked a little bit about sort of the arm strength of Carson Palmer. He was also coming off of some injury. You know, he got really beat up at the end of the year before. So I'm curious about what a hopefully fairly healthy offseason turns out for them. Again, I think this is maybe the most interesting team in the league. I think that this is a team that I don't know if it's the 13-win team or the 7-win team. Right now, I have no sense for it. Neither would surprise me. Either one could happen. You know, if you know these new players on defense come in, they click. As you said, you know, this is a fast team. That offense really, you know, still has such great personnel. They could be a handful for anybody. But at the same token, this is a team that is relying on a lot of older players. You know, Larry Fitzgerald's not getting any younger. Carson Palmer, you know, we've talked about at length. So, you know, if they do end up being a 7-win or less team, I think I can see the road they would go down. I don't know if I have a record prediction for them. I'm just going to split the difference and say that they're going to win 9 games. But, you know, if they win 12 or they win 6, neither would surprise me.
Before we move on, I must say, you said something bad about Larry Fitzgerald. You have to go outside, turn around 3 times, curse, then spit.
Whoa. No,
unacceptable.
Hey, I have never, and I will never have anything negative to say about Larry Fitzgerald. But he is older. the passage of time does even affect him. I don't know that we've seen it much on the field, but one day, you know, he'll just be a fond memory for you and a terrifying memory for me as we look back on this era of the NFL. All right, so with that, we're going to move on to my team, the Seattle Seahawks. And I'm just going to tell you right now, guys, boy, I am really high on these Seahawks, more so than I was last year or even the year before. I mean, you know, this is a Seahawks team that really hit its stride mid-year last year before being badly derailed by injuries. And you know, it happens, you know, plus a game that set special teams back at least a decade against the Arizona Cardinals. You know, I'm going to read you the biggest departure from the Seahawks last year. Steven Hauschka. That's it. I mean, that is by far the biggest name to leave the team. And, you know, we already talked about some of the kicking struggles we've seen. I'm not sure that they necessarily upgraded a lot by bringing in Blair Walsh. But other than that, though, I feel like they were an excellent team who, you know, one of the top teams in the league, didn't lose anything and instead added a bunch of really, really either good players or some intriguing players, right? So, you know, if we go down the list, right, Eddie Lacy, you know, kind of, you know, is he going to be fat Eddie Lacy or is he going to be good Eddie Lacy? So far, he's hitting all of his metrics in terms of being on weight. He's doing really well. He looks good in practice from everything I read, everything I hear. You know, they brought in Luke Jokel, a former number 2 overall pick. Granted, Luke Jokel has been bad, but just in terms of talent, I don't know that there's anybody with that much talent on the offensive line. In addition to that, you have a draft where I think you do a lot of really, really awesome things. I mean, Malik McDowell, to me, is almost a perfect Seahawk. You know, John Schneider does what he does. He trades back multiple times, just accumulates pick after pick after pick. And the first player he takes is a guy who's basically perfect for this defensive line. He's versatile. He can play inside on passing downs, outside on running downs. He is a pass rush machine. That's what he's brought in to do. And so, you know, I look at what was already one of the best defensive lines in the league on one of the best defenses in the league. And you bring in a guy like Malik McDowell on passing downs for his rookie year while he's still getting his feet wet. All of a sudden on passing downs, you're lining up Cliff Averill, Michael Bennett, Frank Clark, and Malik McDowell. Good luck. I mean, I think that's a really difficult situation. And then, you know, this offseason was almost all about depth. You know, this is a team that when it went to the Super Bowl a few years ago had probably the best depth in the league and then had almost no depth last year. So when your frontline starters went down with injury, you didn't have anybody to step in behind them. I count 1, 2, 3 safeties who were drafted, as well as an additional cornerback plus some that are coming back from injury. You know, they picked up a guard with their second pick, Pochick, a center. They're going to play him at guard. And between that and the Luke Jokel signing, offensive line that's not going to be worse than last year, right? I'm a big fan though of Nazir Jones. He's a nose tackle, a D end kind of hybrid sort of player. which is, again, kind of the scheme Bristol guys are what fit in perfectly. You know, even bringing in Deion Jordan, here's another guy who was a top draft pick. You know, he's, again, in terms of talent, he's got as much talent as anybody else on this team. Granted, I think that a lot of these players that you see on these one-year deals that they're kind of kicking the tires on may not necessarily make the team. But I think that's just because of how deep this team is, how many good players are. I mean, you know, if Deion Jordan becomes the next sort of resurrection story for the Seahawks and becomes a terrific player, I don't think anybody's surprised. If he doesn't make it out of training camp, I don't think anybody's surprised. So this is a team that lost a kicker who kind of struggled last year and added depth and added some potential starters on the offensive line, and added some future starters on the defense. So again, just in terms of additions and subtractions from what I thought was already a really good team, I feel really good about it. In addition, you look at the players coming back from injury, you know, you saw how big an impact that Earl Thomas has on this team. You know, when he was gone, this went from an elite top two or three defense to an at the best middle of the road defense. He's back, and you know, he's already, you know, flying around in training camp, eager to get after it. CJ Procise, who was a rookie last year, you know, it was unfortunate because by the time they finally got him integrated with the offense, you saw what he could do, you know, in the New England game when they went to New England, and he was maybe the best player on the field. Then he gets injured shortly after that. Even a guy like Tyler Lockett, who I've been incredibly high on his entire career, really, really came on strong last year, before, you know, injuring his leg. And he may be a little bit further out than Earl Thomas in terms of coming back, but you have basically star caliber players, I think, that are coming back from injury in addition to all these guys that you brought back. So, you know, maybe it's just the blue and green Kool-Aid, but I am so high on this team right now. I think that they're really in an excellent position. And honestly, I feel like they're, for the first time in a few years, they're not getting as much love as I think they should in terms of, you know, the potential Super Bowl contenders. And add on top of that, like Dr. Jones, you mentioned, you know, Russell Wilson was absolutely banged up. He had some significant lower body injuries, which for a mobile quarterback, that's huge. And, you know, for a guy who's not that tall and you know, relies on that firm platform to make his throws, that's a big issue. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm being hyper optimistic, but I think that this is potentially one of the very, very best teams in the league once again, which I don't think is something that you could have said going into last year. So at least in terms of a record prediction, the Seahawks won 10, sorry, you know, 10-ish games because of that stupid tie. I'm going to call this a 13-3 team. I kind of waffle back and forth between 12-4, 13-3, but I really think that, you know, with a couple of division foes who were rebuilding and a really, really strong roster, I think 13 wins is incredibly achievable. Somebody tell me I'm either crazy or that,
yeah,
there's actually some sense in that.
I was
going to
say, doctor, is there anything you can prescribe him for delusion?
I think he's been hitting that pipe up there in Seattle. That's what I think's been going on. You are crazy, kid. Crazy.
I agree with him in saying that they haven't lost much. They haven't. And I think on paper, they still are you know, a great team, and I think they're still the class of the division. But I think some of the things that are starting to happen under behind the scenes, you know, that we've heard about, and whether it's erroneous or not, I remember in the 2014 offseason, you know, saying, oh, no, they're not going to fire Harbaugh. You know, that's stupid. Don't listen to the reports. It's all wrong. Telling Joe, the new Viking super fan who I'm friends with offline, that's not going to happen. They're not going to fire him. And then we all know what happened. So the smoke is starting to smolder a little bit there.
I totally agree. I was literally going to say the same thing. When you look at some of the things that have been going on in Seattle, the attempts to trade one of your emotional leaders on defense, I just think I think the smoke is building. I think there's a morale issue that is slowly building. And that personally, the way Pete Carroll runs the team, I can see that being something that grows. They're bringing in running backs to replace their young, who they thought was going to be a stud, with a guy who can barely keep his weight down. They have to literally put incentives in his contract and follow him all offseason. There are some things going on in that city, on that team, that I would not be happy with from a morale perspective. And I think we all can agree, the locker room can cost you one or two games. So do I think they're still the class of the division? Absolutely. Do I think they're one of the top three or four teams in the NFC? Absolutely. Do I think they're better than last year? Yeah, I don't think so.
All right, Jared, you want to pile on?
I'm not going to pile on. I mean, I think they're the best team in the division, but yeah, I think 13 wins is a little optimistic. I would say more like probably 11-5, maybe 12-4 if everything breaks right. But yeah, just reading those Richard Sherman articles were just so fascinating to see behind the scenes of just kind of how he hasn't gotten over that Super Bowl loss still all these years later, and just how I feel like there probably is a division in the team between the defense and the offense. How, you know, the defense gives up hardly any points, like that 6-6 tie. The defense played great for 100 snaps, and then the offense couldn't do anything. And then, you know, they only scored 3 points against the Rams. I mean, if they had just league average offense, they could have scored, you know, they could have won easily more games. So, I think those trade rumors were real with Sherman, and I've heard a lot of people say that Sherman, you know, going into last year was a top three cornerback in the league, and then last year, you know, he fell and they wouldn't call him. He's like maybe a top 8 or 10, but I think I don't think that they would have put him on a trading block regardless of how much of a problem he caused in the locker room if he was as good as he used to be. So we could begin to see the decline of Sherman, although I do agree that Earl Thomas is still really good, and having him back will make a big impact. But yeah, I mean, they could easily make it back to the Super Bowl. The NFC is wide open. But yeah, I'd say 13-3 is a little optimistic.
And I'll freely admit to being pretty optimistic on that. And I mean, I don't want to dive too deep into the locker room stuff, because we did basically an entire show on it not that long ago. To get a really, really good educated view on that, refer back to our show, I want to say 2 weeks ago, where we brought in G. Scott, who's really plugged in with the team, to kind of give us all the details on that. We're going to start to wrap up, and we're going to switch gears. We're going to go around the horn one more time, and we're going to start with you, Charlie. Just give us your NFC West standings at the end of this year.
I think Seattle will still win the division. I have them winning 10 games, going 10-6, winning the division there. The Cardinals just being a game or two back, you know, with 9-8 wins. I think the Rams and Niners both finish with either 5 or 6 wins each. I think we're both kind of about that same era. You know, we both are kind of searching for our quarterback and our offense. We have a decent running game, and our front sevens are very formidable. So it's like we're the same team. Other than that, I think Seattle will probably be one and done on their division or on their division win in the playoffs. And we will, in fact, be the, you know, probably 6th or 7th ranked division in the NFL.
All right. What do you say, Jared? Final standings.
Yeah, I say the same order as Charlie. Seahawks will win it, probably 11-5, I'd say. Next are the Cardinals. 9-7, 10-6. I guess I'll go with 9-7. And then the Rams and Niners, yeah, they'll be probably about a game separating them. And I guess I'll be optimistic and say the Rams are 6-10 and the Niners are 5-11. I mean, I think we play the AFC South. I mean, we don't have a tremendously hard schedule. I mean, the division isn't what it was 3 years ago, where we were one of the top two in the league. But I think our schedule favors us to maybe get a win or so more than would it be anticipated if we were playing more difficult divisions.
And the AFC South, though, has gotten a lot better I actually have them ranked third in all the NFL divisions.
Whoa, really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Andrew Luck back fully healthy. Marcus Mariota and the Titans surging. I think that's going to be a great little division there. The Jags could be better. You know, that defense, you know, Gus Bradley's gone, but he still has a disciple there to run that same Carroll-type defense. So Jack will be there, Ramsey. I mean, that's going to be a good squad.
Yeah. So there's a division with one good quarterback and one mediocre quarterback. But they had their own show.
Wow. I think Luck is still hurt. I heard Luck isn't throwing yet. I just know it's because the Rams play the Colts the first week, and they're saying that Luck may not really even be ready for week one. But
okay, focus.
Hey, we'll focus, sorry.
NFC West, and you're right. I may have been overrating Luck at mediocre right now. Dr. Jones, final standings.
I think anyone that compliments the Jags needs to wash their mouth out with soap. As we
talk after this season.
That's right. So I actually am in agreement with Charlie and Jared. I think Seattle's going to be an 11-win team this year. Arizona's going to be a 10-win team. I think the only thing at the end of the season that's going to separate them is Seattle's got a much easier schedule. Only one early game the entire year. We have five of our first eight are on the road, including losing what is just a small commute and turning it into an entire flight to London, which I think is a massive problem for the Cardinals. Playing Seattle at home on Thursday night football with only 4 days rest, another problem on our schedule. That's the only thing I see separating Seattle and Arizona, which is why I've got Arizona second at 10-6. The Rams and the Niners, I think they got a couple more years left. Rams at 5 wins because I do think Goff is going to be better than Hoyer and their defense is better. Niners I got at 4 wins. Again, staring at one of the top 5 picks in the draft, and we'll see how they go with that. But other than that, I don't really see much change. I think it's plus or minus 1 win for Seattle and Arizona in both ways. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, not to make this boring, but I think we're all kind of in agreement there. I see the Seahawks up at the top. Again, I see them at that 12 to 13 win range. I see Arizona not... I'm going to err a little bit on the positive-ish side. Again, I think they could win even more than this, but I'm going to peg them at 10 wins and a wild card. Between the Rams and the 49ers, I think they're both going to hover around that 5-win-ish mark. I'm going to put the Rams ahead of them. I just think that I'll take, you know, I think the defenses will be fairly similar in terms of results, but I'll take, I guess, Jared Goff and Todd Gurley over TBD and TBD for the 49ers. And I think that'll make the difference there. So basically, I think we're all more or less just saying a repeat of this past year's standings, which means there is about a 99% chance that we are all completely wrong about it, in which case this should make for a very interesting 2017 season. Gentlemen, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate anybody who had to get up really early like I did. And I will see you guys once the season starts.
All right, good job by the superfans, as usual. I wouldn't expect them to do a bad job, that's for sure. As I look at what I predicted last year for this particular division, I was really high on the Cardinals, wasn't so high on the Seahawks, definitely wasn't high on the Rams, and certainly wasn't high on the 49ers. That said, I was higher on the Rams and the 49ers than they actually finished the season at. And the Cardinals, I was way off on. The Seahawks, I nailed, except for the tie. I didn't have the tie in my prediction. I don't have any ties predicted, as a matter of fact. This season, like I said, I don't think I learned anything. I'm still really high on the Cardinals. I think the Cardinals have the best roster out of all the teams here in the West. And I have them finishing atop the division at 12-4. You know, Dr. Jones mentioned a couple of things with their schedule, including a trip to London and a short week between hosting for a hosting of the Seahawks. I did not necessarily factor those into my decision on the 12-4, but certainly could see a short week against a division rival like that ending up on the losing side, which could flip-flop the Cardinals and the Seahawks, because I have the Seahawks coming in second at 11-5, being a wild card team here in the NFC. Again, it's the Seahawks are tough to sort of put a finger on, but I think 11-5 is right about the spot for them. And the Cardinals at 12-4, that might be a little too high, but I definitely see them with double digit wins. The Rams, listen, there's still a lot of work to do with those Los Angeles Rams, and it takes more than just firing Jeff Fisher to improve that team. So I still think they got a lot of work to do. I've got them at 3-13, and the 49ers, if it wasn't for the Jets, the 49ers would be my last place team. I've got them at 1-15. So pretty much the 49ers, the Browns, and the Jets, whom we've all discussed, the Browns and the Jets we've discussed before in previous division previews, those are my bottom teams. And if you've missed any of our previous division previews, well then become a subscriber. We're available on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, AHA Radio, anywhere great podcasts are heard. When you subscribe to the show, you don't miss any of our podcasts. Plus, you can go back and see all of our archives. So if you missed a show, you can go back and listen to it, such as the AFC East or the AFC North. And Killer Craig 22 was kind enough to leave us a 5-star review saying, "This is a cool football podcast for fans who like to be entertained. Pod Vader has been doing it for years and has been a great host since his ESPN days." Why, thank you, Killer Craig. I appreciate the kind words. You don't have to leave kind words either. You could be like Nickens here on iTunes as well, saying, "You'll enjoy being a subscriber." I agree. You'll enjoy being a subscriber. So go ahead, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, AHA Radio, anywhere great podcasts are heard. Subscribe to the show. And of course, you can find us on our website, nextfanup.wordpress.com. You can always see all of our shows on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU podcast. We're always tweeting at NFU podcast, or you can check out my tweets at The Real Pod Vader. I'm always tweeting out the show. Many different places you can find the Next Fan Up podcast to share with your buddies, because we don't have any industry secrets here. We're open to share with all of you. So that was the NFC West. Only one division remains in our 2017 division preview, and that is the NFC South, which features two teams that are lacking a superfan, the Carolina Panthers and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. If you get your emails in on time, you might be on that division preview show. For some reason, I don't think you're going to get your emails in on time, but you can be the superfan representative for either of those two teams by sending in an email, nextfanup@gmail.com, for the entire season, because we've got preseason coming up and, of course, the regular season, and we're going to need your insights on your favorite teams. And we'll present the insights of all the other teams as we move along here in 2017. With that, here is our backup quarterback, Landry Jones. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today, I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.